Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
There you go. What's wrong with you people? Why can't you understand the logic of this? Yes, Game of Thrones is back. The initial episode of the final series debuted last Monday, I think it was, at 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that. John Fardy joins us once again. Of course, John, you had a more swanky first class experience.
I'm not sure how swanky it was.
Seeing the first episode.
Yes, I was in the waterfront in Belfast on Friday night. It's quite telling that, you know, that people talk about the death of cinema, and here we were in a place like the waterfront where, you know, Take That or someone might play, watching this TV show on a big screen. And whatever about piracy of the episode, there was definitely no one in that auditorium filming it, because they were very keen that phones and all not distract anyone.
Did you all have put your phones in those bags?
No, we didn't actually, but people were constantly walking around, so I feel like I should be hiding something.
Yes. No, and actually, well, I mean, that's interesting given that most people would have watched it at home. You watched it in a full auditorium. Was that experience different in the sense of, did it get laughs? Did people go ooh or ah?
Yeah, I was actually surprised by how much oohing and ahing there was. There's not to give spoilers, but there was one or two moments that might merit an ooh or an ah, and they were quite audible in it. So it was almost like an old style, like you were watching a Western in the 50s, because there was a visceral oohing and ahing and all sorts, you know. No popcorn, though. Interesting. There was no food allowed for whatever reason. Yeah, I know.
Talking about killing the fun. Yeah,
exactly.
Clapped and buzzkill.
I couldn't play Tetris or eat popcorn. It was a killer.
Now, I suppose it's very difficult, particularly with Game of Thrones, because people mightn't have caught up, or they might be nearly there, or they might have watched this episode, so you have to be very, very careful about spoilers.
Yeah. Also, though, you said to me during the break about being review proof.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember the Beatles in Shea Stadium, and halfway through the gig, John Lennon starts speaking Japanese because, like, it didn't matter. Nobody could hear him. And in a way, you feel like, if this episode had been terrible, like the worst thing ever on TV, I don't think it would have dented it at all, because it's become such a juggernaut that one poor episode isn't going to stand. That said, let's talk about the episode if we might. I certainly thought it was good. I don't think it was a great episode. I mean, people often has of the high watermark of episodes, the famous red wedding scene where all sort of stuff hit the fan. This wasn't like this. There was a lot of scene setting to be done, a lot of characters catching up with their own plot lines. So we knew what was happening, but it is very hard to do this without spoilers.
Yeah.
So they had to catch up. And there was a few ooh-ah moments about that. I thought there was one god-awful scene where, this isn't a spoiler, Jon Snow and the Queen fly dragons together in a kind of Mills and Booney moment.
That was weird.
Yeah, and it's cold up in the north. Hold your queen closer. You know. And the best thing in that scene is a dragon eyeball and going, get your hands off my queen.
She said, we could stay here and no one would ever find us.
Yeah. Is real.
No, yes they would. Yeah. And you'd freeze to death.
There's
idiot.
White Walkers on the way. So, but apart from that, it was a fine episode. I liked the ending. I thought there was, again, no spoilers, but two people look at each other, and if you've seen the episode, you know what I'm meaning.
Yeah.
And that's something coming home to roost from the very first episode.
And
that's clever. The Sopranos used to do that. Stuff you'd forgotten about, and 5 years later, it would be back in your face. So look, you know, I spoke to some of the cast, which you'll hear on Screen Time this Saturday. But the guy who plays Sam said, you know, the ending is very satisfying of the whole series, and he wasn't giving any spoilers. And I said, so we'll be happy with it. And he said, well, I don't know, but that's not what Game of Thrones has ever been about. And basically that it has its own internal dramatic dialogue or dramatic rhythm and structure. And it's going to stick to that, whether we like it or not, kind of. And I mentioned The Sopranos in the same way that The Sopranos it gave you what you wanted, but it kept its own logic. It wasn't really interested in anything other than telling a good story. And I think Game of Thrones is a lot like that. So if there is an episode where it has to set scenes, that's fine. That's the way the show works.
Plus also, I think it was probably a useful exercise for the viewer.
Quite honestly, I
couldn't remember who was alive and who was dead.
It's true, isn't it?
Because that's one of the great things is that you can invest away in any character, but there's no good guys or bad guys here.
No,
you know?
Exactly. I sometimes think Jon Snow might be the moral center if you had to pick
one. Yeah.
You know? But absolutely. And, you know, don't forget there can be episodes where characters just aren't in it and you completely forget about them. And then they come back and like, oh yeah, he was in as well. So you're right. I mean, they had to reset the scene a bit because it's been a long time since the last series as well, you know?
Yeah. So it did kind of remind us, and It had to, I suppose it kind of had to do that on given that so much stuff was set up.
Yeah, exposition.
There was a bit of exposition, but even in the previous series, everything was leading to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't a great surprise. Really.
And I think as well, there's five more to go. And you look at the length, that was only 54 minutes. I thought it was going to be like an hour and a half. Yeah. But next week's is 82, then it's 78, 78 and 79. So they're nearly movies. Mm. So, and it is fascinating to see, where is it going to go from here? Like, I mean, there's a very obvious place where it's going to go. I feel like we're having a mafia lunch here with that name. People. What about the guy with the other thing?
Because we know we're being listened to. Well, we actually are being listened to, yes. I hope. Yeah. I also thought was, and again, I don't think this is a spoiler. In fact, this might encourage people to look at it. Yeah. Because in maybe the last couple of series, they didn't do it as much. But before that, like, you know, it was almost like, here's your mandatory 10 minutes of nudity.
Yeah.
Which they did kind of come back to in this one. But it was almost like a Game of Thrones greatest hits. we got to show you the brothel for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. And they put three women in it.
Yeah.
And then they have coitus interruptus, I think, because it all has to stop because there's some urgent business from Winterfell or somewhere. Yeah, no, I noticed that actually. It was very tokenistic, you know.
I wonder, were they winking in because it was so gratuitous?
So knowingly. Yeah, it was very gratuitous actually when you say it. Yeah. And I hadn't thought about that. The sex had lessened up, actually. Because I remember a friend of mine used to call it game of porn, but it hasn't been like that in a few seasons, really. Maybe they'll up that. I read a thing the other week, I think it was about in the New Yorker somewhere, not to get off topic, but the death of the sex scene. Not that I read the New Yorker all the time, it came up on my Twitter, but that sex scenes aren't really what they used to.
Porn is done for that.
Yes, that's, I was going to get to that.
Yeah.
But you know the way, like, sex scenes used to be talking points in movies, but I guess it's the age we live in. Porn has taken care of all that, you know. But a good sex scene had a value over and above titillation, if you know what
I mean.
Sure. Sex scenes used to be a talking point of a movie for reasons other than sex. They can convey power and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I'm getting way off topic here.
But I think in Game of Thrones, it was almost like, especially for the larger female roles, they seemed to be in their contract. They had to do at least two or three nude scenes. And maybe, you know, who knows, behind the scenes, there may have been a revolt of like, okay, come on, let's see some more Mickey action then if we're going to do this.
Maybe.
And they thought, okay, all right, fair point.
Yeah,
because your woman having to walk naked around, you know, the place and all that stuff.
You know? That was like, Cersei. Yeah. So, incidentally, and again, not to give spoilers, but the interaction she has with her scene in this episode, I thought was really good. Did you know?
Yeah, that was
the way
that
was handled.
And that was
because that was sex without sex.
Yes, it was. Yeah. But it was also complex in the sense that I don't know what her motivations are, and you can't really know whether she's being, you know, some of the things she said. Does she mean that? Does she not mean that? You know, it's all, everyone's using each other. But of course, that's with Cersei. It's always that way. Now, a couple of bits of TV news, and you know, we'll stick with Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
it set a record.
Yeah, not the kind of record, but maybe you would expect it for piracy. 54 million illegal streams of the first episode of season 8, episode 1. Like, that's huge. From that well-known data analytics company, Muzo. But 54 million, considering like in the States, 17.4 million people watched it, like on proper TV that you paid for. But like, I was thinking about this, like maybe this sounds terribly middle class, now I'm going to say something middle class, but like the package to watch Game of Thrones that I have is, you know, it's this bog standard TV package. I don't pay, like, you just, a lot of it seems to have been in Asia, so maybe they have different, but it seems so easy now to watch this stuff, not illegally. Something like Game of Thrones, if you have Sky, certainly, they're literally begging you to watch it the next day. It pops up on every kind of reminder. Yeah. So
I don't know. But I mean, in China, apparently they cut 10 minutes out of it. And and we don't know which 10 minutes it was.
Yeah. Maybe intermittently, you know.
Oh, you missed the alien invasion. Yeah. Oh.
It was all a dream.
Sorry, China. Right. Mike Myer is going to play multiple characters in a new Netflix comedy series. There's a sentence I never wanted to read out.
Well, I don't know. Do you not like Mike Myers?
Nah, I'm over Mike Myers. It's the same thing.
Wayne's World, the Spy Who Shagged Me, and all that kind of stuff. He's taken a break, though. He hasn't done a huge amount, and he had a really
has he, or maybe couldn't get a part.
Yeah, very hard on him there now. No, I mean, he did a great documentary a while ago, the Supermensch, the Legend of Shep Gordon, that was on Netflix, all about this talent agent, and he directed it, and it was actually really good. So Netflix have said, you know, he's the king of character comedy, which you could make the case he is, and he's going to do a 6-parter. We know nothing about it other than he's going to get to play lots of different characters, which I think he does very well, I have to say. So I'm reasonably excited about it. And I've said it to you lots of time before. This is where Netflix are going. They're going after these kind of great actors and comedians who are probably not in a downward phase, but we haven't heard from them a while. Like, I can't, there will be an Eddie Murphy Netflix special. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
You know, probably. They'll go actually, get him, yeah. And he'll do a stand-up thing and it'll be streamed by billions. Like, that's where Netflix works for these type of people, you know?
Season 2 of Big Little Lies is coming.
I'm really excited about that. Did you watch the first?
Yes, I did.
I thought it was really good.
Well, I don't know why there is a second season. It was a self-contained story. So
in the
by
book
definition,
it
makes everything that comes after that ridiculous.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there was, if you've seen it, you'll know it ended rather distinctly with, again, not to give spoilers, but
if you've ever seen Murder on the Orient Express, you'll know exactly what happens at the end of it. So it's not exactly an original idea.
Yes, but Meryl Streep is going to be in the new series.
Wow,
as
okay.
The mother of someone who may no longer be with us, like Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Zoe Kravitz. They were all brilliant, and I remember sitting down to watch that with my wife and not wanting to watch it because she told me about the book, and I thought, oh, that sounds dull, I'm not going to read that. And then I was in, I just thought it was great. And it takes place in Monterey, for people who don't know, and it's such this, all these posh women doing the drop-offs at school, and it's horrible.
Everyone has lovely houses.
Yeah, but
everyone has really lovely houses.
It's the tragedy behind White Picket Fences. I really liked it. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, okay, no, and I'll watch it. I don't care about any of them, but I do like their houses. Two more shows to talk about after this.
Ugh, that ass is everything to me.
Hey, focus. Yeah? Save that for Grindr.
I love that you think I have enough self-esteem to be on Grindr. What would my profile even say? I'm gay and disabled. But I promise not to drool on you until the third date.
There are plenty of drool fetishists out there. Flex your foot.
I'm so f***ing jealous of Bob.
Brian. Bob has to use a catheter to pee.
I know, it must be freeing to be so disabled. Sometimes I feel like having a mild case is like being biracial.
You're saying like 15 different offensive things right now.
I'm just saying, I'm in limbo.
There you go. That's Special. It's now streaming on Netflix, featuring Ryan O'Connell, who is a gay man with cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And so this isn't a documentary, though.
No, this is him playing himself based on his memoir, I'm Special and Other Lies We Tell Ourselves. He was
great title. Yeah.
They call it showrunner. That, like, a runner used to be a guy who brought the tea.
And now it's the other end. Yeah,
but he was a writer on the new season of Will and Grace and stuff, and by all accounts couldn't get or wanted a part. You're playing a gay man with cerebral palsy, so found it, and it's referred to CP in it. This is great. These are 15 minutes on average, which is refreshingly short. So it begins with Ryan kind of at a crossroads in his life where he gets an internship in this website, a makeup website called Egg Woke, which is the quintessential millennial nonsense of a website where there's this overbearing editor wants them to write about their own lives. And she's so moronic. She comes in and sees, as he describes it, his mild case of CP. And she says, what happened to you? And he says, I was in a car accident, which he was. He's actually hit by a car earlier in the episode. So it becomes that he's the guy who was hit by a car. That's his disability. Now, other people know, but no one in his office does. And she encourages him to write an article about it. And it's a big hit and it goes viral. In tandem with that, he's living with his mother, played brilliantly by Jessica Hetch. She's the woman who played Carol in Friends, Ross's supposedly annoying nemesis. She was married to his ex-wife who became a lesbian.
Yeah.
And she's brilliant in this. Like, his mother adores him, but, you know, there's that, she wants the best for him, but her life is slightly held back by caring for him. He loves her, but he wants to move out, and he does. He gets his own place. He starts to make some friends, and he starts to explore his sexuality, and there's an incredibly funny scene, and again, for people are on Easter holidays with their kids. Young ears, be careful. But he has sex for the first time with a male sex worker. And it's, you know, it's funny. We were talking about the death of a sex scene. This is one of the best sex scenes I've seen in a long time. It was hilarious. It was poignant. And the whole show is poignant yet hilarious. You know, and there's so many things here that you seemingly can't laugh about. Rightly so, being gay, cerebral palsy. And it somehow blows it all out the window and you're laughing. And it's also incredibly sweet. I absolutely loved it. And as I say, it's 15 minutes to 18 minutes of each episode. So you're not investing But with that, everything's lean. There's no, we talked about exposition and Game of Thrones. This isn't going on for years. So everything you see is part of the story. And you can watch the whole thing if you've time in one night. It's like watching a movie, but yet they're really episodic. It's just a delight. It really is.
Yeah. And that, again, that's one of the, actually, that is one of the strengths of Netflix. There's no determination what the length of any episode. No. It can be as long as you like or as short as you like, which is actually rarely refreshing to.
None of these are longer than 20 minutes was the longest one. And most of them are around 60.
Brian wants to know, is John looking forward to Cobra Kai Season 2, a thoroughly enjoyable if lightweight show, sleeper hit of last year? Didn't you review that before and you liked it? No, maybe somebody else. On the subject, Mike Myers Orna says, no, he's been on US TV and they didn't know it. He was hosting a TV show in disguise for the last year. It was called The Gong Show. So he has been doing stuff. We just weren't aware. That's true, actually. Yeah. That's a fair
hasn't
point.
Done big Hollywood movies in a long time, though.
Yeah. Jared says, I was very excited to have Game of Thrones back in my life. I wish something had actually happened, though. I'm hoping next week will be better. Well, you know, it kind of put it together. It had to knit things together. I think he had a bit part in Bohemian Rhapsody. It should be said. I wish there wasn't a 2-year separation between this series and the last series. Then we wouldn't have had to waste a whole episode watching an extended catch up. So boring. I'm sorry. But, you know, all those dragons and stuff, you know, it takes a long time to organise that stuff. First he ragged on Derry Girls, now he's attacking Game of Thrones.
No, I'm not! What's wrong with these people?
I know, I don't know what's
wrong with it. I've watched every episode of it. I've spent more time with that than I have some of my colleagues in here. I'm not ragging on it. It just wasn't a stellar episode. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Plus, I've made some peace with Derry Girls. I did say I thought the last episode of the second series that was the best one they'd done. I thought it was really good. So just put that in your text machine and smoke it or something.
Right, so you're just saying it's better than the kind of mediocre
one. No, I'm not. Let's move on.
Right, our third show is The Borrowers. It's running on RT1 on Tuesdays at 8:30. Here's a clip.
I don't think anyone ever dreams of becoming a loans officer.
Well, maybe not. But Cara Credit Union has been making its 43,000 members' dreams come true since 1968. In the past year alone, this humble office has lent out over 40 million euro for all sorts of reasons.
Every day is completely different. You could go from a simple car loan, or you could get something for a rare species of bird or something like that, you know.
There you go. That's The Borrowers on our RTE1. Obviously, it's set in a credit union. So, John, does it capture the explosive excitement of working in a credit union, as we might expect?
Does it? No, not quite. I mean, there's probably a good documentary to be made about the credit union. Unfortunately, this...
No, maybe there isn't. Yeah, maybe that's the point.
Well, the thing is, right, the credit union, you know, certainly as a kid growing up in north side of Dublin in the 80s, it was this institution. People used to have to go and pay their credit union loan on a Friday. Like, it was a source, and still is, for social good. And it's you know, the interest rates are very low, and it's for the community, and money goes back. Now they've had their issues, like all financial institutions. Not everything went according to plan. But, you know, I salute the credit union and had families' holidays on it when I was a kid. So hats off and all that. But the idea of having a TV show where, and in this first episode, there was only three different candidates who go into a room in an office in Tralee or Mullingar, as it was in this thrilling episode, and talk to a loans officer about, one, getting money to go to Belfast for a cataract operation, two, to get a son to pay him back for a car loan, and three, because a guy wants to go to Nashville to play the guitar. There's just nothing really to it, you know? Mm. And it's, I don't know what the motivation is. You get the idea it was this idea in a pitch room somewhere, and they went, let's make a show about people being receiving and occasionally refusing loans, and there might be human drama in that. I think maybe they just didn't choose, certainly based on the first episode, dramatic enough examples. Like the old man, or the man in his 70s, have to be careful, it's not old, he's in his 70s, he's going to get a cataract operation because he can't get it on the HSC.
Okay, well, that's poignant.
Too long. Yeah, that was probably the most poignant bit about it. But, like, it's over 24 minutes or whatever. They kept going back to it. There just wasn't enough drama in it at all. And you can tell they're trying to make stars out of the loan officers. But, you know, your job is giving loans to people. I don't know how dramatic and star infusing that kind of is.
If you're dealing with a financial institution, you kind of want them to be boring. You don't, you know, I mean, on a day-to-day level, you don't want to be watching that stuff on TV or some, you know, some guy goes in and says, I want to borrow 20 grand because I want to go to Nashville and be a star. Oh yeah, you've got it. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear them say, no, you've no talent, get out.
Well, what they do with the Nashville guy is they give him less money than he wanted, and they do a tiny follow-up where he's in Nashville
begging.
He gets to go on stage briefly. Now, it looked like he was in a small enough pub, to be honest. But like, if you take something like One Born Every Minute, right? Yeah. They're in a labor ward. I mean, that's probably the kind of reality TV. A loan office in Tralee with a guy looking for 3 grand to go to Nashville. There's just not enough drama in it, unfortunately. And I hate saying that because, as I say, they're a force for social good and they need to be supported and all that.
Absolutely,
but,
yeah, absolutely.
But it's not telly. They're not a source for TV, unfortunately. So I'm sorry.
Going back to something you said earlier, John.
Yes.
You're absolutely correct. You can never get it right. Okay. God, John, can you not get it right? The last episode of Derry Girls was actually the worst. It should have ended on the wedding episode. The last episode was forced. It didn't work. Jeez, John.
Yeah.
No. You just can't make these people happy.
No, I can't. That's what's wrong with them. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. John, thanks very much. Sorry for that. Another bruising.
I know
bruising,
you appreciate me, though, right?
I do. Yeah. Another bruising encounter for John with our listeners. That was John Fardy there, the late John Fardy. We'll take a break. After that, the woman of no importance.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.